And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Saturday Slammin' Jam, hosted by Andrew Schlecht with Alex Spears.
How about we can just watch basketball?
That's a man's jam!
I like that idea.
Live from Oklahoma.
Quick clip!
With questions and participants from all around the world.
Anthony Edwards!
Put that on a poster!
Whether you're flipping your flapjacks, tending to your yard, or just sipping your coffee, get ready, sit back, relax. It's the Saturday Slammin' Jam.
Fact is, I missed this shot. I'll walk away. I'm still a chump.
Here's Andrew.
Welcome to the Saturday Slammin' Jam. I'm your host, Andrew Schlecht. Be sure to go to theathletic.com/NBA show to get The Athletic for $3.99 a month. With me, as always, is my co-host, Alex Spears. And Alex, tell us what happened in the NBA this week.
Well, Andrew, it all began last Friday night, as it always does, when the Golden State Warriors, our Warriors, faced off against the Washington Wizards. Once upon a time, our Wizards. With the Warriors up by three with 6 seconds left, it was time to kick off another great week for the Wheel of Fandom. The only problem was that Bradley Beal decided to shoot a three-pointer and the Warriors decided to foul him. The Warriors lost. On Saturday night, the Lakers, still without LeBron and Anthony Davis, beat the Nets by 25 points, a game in which Kyrie and KD played. It also happened to be the final game of LaMarcus Aldridge's career, something we would learn later in the week when Aldridge announced his retirement. On Monday night, everyone was in a celebratory mood because Steph Curry passed Wilt Chamberlain, the answer to every NBA trivia question for the Warriors' all-time franchise leader in points scored. Unfortunately, in the closing minutes of the game, Jamal Murray's knee buckled on a drive to the basket, and we would later learn that Murray had torn his ACL and would be out for the season, putting a massive damper on what was looking like a very exciting postseason for Denver. On Tuesday night, we had a Doherty 40! Lou Gintz, Dort, best known for putting NBA players into the torture chamber, scored 42 points in a game against the Utah Jazz. On Wednesday, the Mavs were down by two to the Grizzlies in the final moments of the game, with Grayson Allen heading to the free throw line. It was over, Andrew. But Grayson Allen missed both free throws, giving the Mavs a sliver of hope. Instead of trying to shoot a normal shot to win the game, Luka decided to use this opportunity to try another one of his trick shots, shooting a three-pointer with his body at a 45-degree angle while not looking at the basket. And of course, it went in. And on Thursday, we learned that Zach LaVine would miss multiple games due to health and safety protocols. This capped off a miserable 0-4 week for the Bulls, which included losses to the Timberwolves and the Magic. The Bulls currently sit at the spot for the 10th overall pick, with the 8th most difficult schedule remaining. If there's ever any silver lining to this, it's that the pick going to the Magic this year is top 4 protected, which all of a sudden might actually mean something. What a week, Andrew.
Oh, man. The Bulls are not back. They are.
Oh, not at all.
They actually are back to where they've been the past several years. Alex, this week for my most interesting thing, I want to talk about a team that ranks second in defense this month. A team that's not relying on star power, but grit, coaching, obviously defense to get through this really tough stretch of the season. I want to talk.
Finally, some respect for a small market. Yes, I love this.
I want to talk about this little try-hard team out west called the Los Angeles Lakers. Alex, this team has been through a lot. And big shouts to my guy, Jovan Buha, who put this list together of the injuries that the Lakers have been through in the last couple weeks. So obviously, they're dealing with the Anthony Davis right calf strain. They have the LeBron James right ankle sprain. Kyle Kuzma had a calf strain as well. Wes Matthews had right Achilles tendon tightness and a neck strain. Dennis Schroeder had a pelvic contusion. Marc Gasol had left hamstring soreness. Andre Drummond had his big toenail ripped off. Alex Caruso had left knee soreness. Markieff Morris, left ankle sprain. KCP, back spasms. Alphonso McKinney, health and safety protocols. And obviously, we have the Jared Dudley MCL tear. Just an insane amount of injuries just piling up. But still, they made it through this road trip, 4-3, a seven-game trip that you just thought was going to absolutely dismantle this Lakers team. You kind of go into it thinking, okay, they could be a play-in team by the end of this, and yeah, before LeBron and AD get back, which will happen at the end of this month. But they did it by committee. They got through it. And they had 10 players score 8 or more points, or average 8 or more points during this stretch. You had Kuzma, and big shouts to Kuz. This is a guy that I feel has gotten a ton of shade in the past for his defense or maybe his shot selection, but the guy has really turned his career around, and it's not that he's scoring a ton of points. This isn't even a career high in points for him, but he's defending well, he's making the right plays, and he looks like a guy who's going to contribute at a high level. So big shouts to Kuz, who averaged 16 points during the stretch. Schroeder, 15 points during the stretch. KCP, who's finally started to turn it on. He's had a rough season up to this point, but he started to turn it on as well, who was really, really good in the bubble. Markieff Morris, 13. Chandler Horton Tucker, 13. Andre Drummond, 10. Ben McLemore, 8. And Montrezl Harrell, 8. And then you have Caruso and Marc Gasol, who Marc Gasol is playing limited minutes for them. But they're doing it by committee. They're playing crazy gritty defense. They're not score, like I listed all those guys that are scoring. I think during the same stretch, they're like 29th in offense. And if not for the pathetic Oklahoma City Thunder, they would probably be the worst offense in the league. But we've seen this with lots of teams. If you put together a solid defense, you're going to give yourself a chance every night. And sure, they had some luck against the Hornets, who also had a ton of guys out. But still, you just need to win games. And I wanted to give them a shout out. I think it's really interesting that you have all these role players finally coming together. A lot of these guys are starting to click. And we're only a couple weeks away from seeing LeBron and AD back in uniform, which seems like great timing. And then you have Andre Drummond, who I think can complement this group some. He's been playing what he calls probably the worst offensive stretch of his career. But I think that there are things to be encouraged about with Drummond. I think, and perhaps it starts with Kuzma's comments, which could be taken in lots of different ways. But Kuzma said, like, this is, and I actually kind of respect this in a way. It's major shade thrown at these other franchises. But he said he's kind of never really been coached in his career, playing in Detroit and Cleveland and then coming here. What did you think about that?
I mean, it almost, see, I didn't even take it as a negative thing, because I almost feel like it's Kuzma kind of talking about his own journey. Because you talked about how Kuzma's game has kind of been poo-pooed for many years leading up to these last 2 years. And a lot of it was because he had the perception of being kind of like a good stats, bad team kind of player, like this empty calories type of guy. And over these last 2 years, he's become a winning player. And so he's almost describing his own journey in the NBA, and he sees it in Andre Drummond right now. And so if Drummond can go through that same process, and maybe it'll happen really quick for him, and he can really start performing in spot minutes during the playoffs, it'll really mean something for the Lakers.
It would be not only incredible for the Lakers, it would be ridiculous, because you just get this guy for nothing. He just gets to join your team, which is a luxury of being the Lakers. But it would be a huge deal for Andre Drummond's career. If he plays well and helps them win a championship and is a key contributor, he's going to go get a contract, like a big fat contract again. And I didn't really think he could get a giant contract again, but if he can have the same trajectory as Kuz has, where you just learn how to make winning plays, you learn how to kind of fit in a little bit, and I think that will be a lot easier. He's struggled right now, but I think it will be easier when you have the voice of LeBron James and Anthony Davis next to you. Right. I think that will change a lot. Also, it's just funny that Kuz mentions Detroit. Detroit is the team Kyle Kuzma grew up rooting for.
Oh, really?
So major shade to his own franchise. Really sad. One more thing about the Lakers that I thought was just really interesting, and it was in light of learning about LaMarcus Aldridge, and shouts to LaMarcus. I hope that he continues to live a long life. That kind of stuff is really scary. And so hopefully all can be well with him in the future, for him and his family. But I was just looking back at draft classes. I was just curious, like who's left from that 06 draft class that LaMarcus was a part of. And it's not many guys. It's Rudy Gay, who was picked 8th. It's JJ Redick, who was 11th. Rajon Rondo, who was picked 21st. Kyle Lowry at 24. PJ Tucker at 35. And then Paul Millsap at 47. Lots of gritty players in that draft class. I really like that class. It was not viewed as a very good draft class. You had Andrea Bargnani going number 1. And then LaMarcus going 2. But definitely some really good players that have stuck around. And then I was just thinking, okay, so who's left from behind them? And I really just thought about LeBron. And I went to the 03 draft class first because I'm just like, I don't think there's anybody but LeBron and Melo, and there wasn't. And that's it. And it could have been just LeBron. It felt like 2 years ago it was just going to be LeBron. But Melo has kind of resurrected his career some here. And then you look at the other players around him, like even the list from the 06 class, like none of those guys are at the peak of their powers. Most of them are coming off the bench. Most of them are role players. Maybe Kyle Lowry's the only one that you could say is still like a star type of player. And then you look at 04, the year after LeBron. It's Dwight Howard and Andre Iguodala. That's it. That's all that's left. Even you go back to 02, there's nobody left from 02. 05, like Chris Paul is one of those guys too. Like he's one of those steady guys that continues to be a star. That's great. The only guys that are left in that class is Lou Williams and Ersan Ilyasova.
So, out of that entire list, Ilyasova is the most shocking. Like, yeah. Shout out to Ersan for being sticking in the league this long. That's he's so still true. On a roster today. It's amazing.
He is. He's barely hanging on. He barely made the list. It's a good thing that he just signed because he barely made this list. But you just look at that list. LeBron has been in the league longer than all the guys that we have talked about, which is just wild to me and just crazy that we can still think of him as the best player in the NBA. And this has just never been done. I think that even next season, I don't see us stopping our thoughts about him being the best player in the NBA next season even. And to me, that just kind of blew my mind. Just like, wow, like looking at these list of players and like all these guys, you can see almost every single one of these guys that we've listed being out of the league in 2 years, except for LeBron, right?
Yeah, and historically, like it is always crazy going to Basketball Reference and looking at Kareem Abdul-Jabbar or Karl Malone and realizing how long those guys played at a high level in the league, and then realizing that like that's going to be one of LeBron's calling cards when we look back at him historically, his yep. longevity and durability in this league, even with some of these recent injuries. I mean, it really is one of the main cases for him being like the greatest of all time, if you're going to make that case.
Yes, without a doubt. But that's it. The Lakers, they're interesting. Don't sleep on the Lakers. Their role players are playing well. Alex Caruso is ready for another title run, Alex.
And when you look at, you know, one of the side effects of the Jamal Murray injury is that now the Lakers are in that 4 or 5 spot where they would be playing Denver, a depleted Denver team in that first round. They wouldn't have yep. to see the Clippers until the conference finals. Obviously, the Jazz are still a really tough second round opponent, but I think mm-hmm. that even is working out for the Lakers. And yeah, like you mentioned, remembering back to the offseason when a lot of people pegged the Lakers as this was the team that won the offseason, the additions of Dennis Schroeder, the addition of Montrezl Harrell, the addition of Marc Gasol, who's even not even playing that much. But this was the promise of those moves. The promise was you won't have to play AD and LeBron. Now, we were just thinking rest. We weren't thinking injuries at the time. But mm-hmm. these guys will be able to get you through some stretches without those guys having to play big minutes. And you look at the like who they've beaten. Outside of that Nets win, we're looking at the Hornets, the Raptors, the Kings, the Magic, the Cavs. So it's not like a murderer's yeah. row, but you have to win those games in order to maintain your seeding. And they haven't gotten a lot of push from the team behind them, which is my most interesting thing of the week, Andrew. So my most interesting thing of the week starts off with a tweet. Danny Morang of Blazers Edge, also the post-game show here in Portland, Blazers Outsiders, he tweeted out a tweet after the Blazers were blown out by the Clippers last week. He said, yeah, there's something not right with this team. Very strong relationship that's been going for 4 to 5 years, but not going anywhere, and no one wants to say anything type vibes.
Oh, no.
Damning. Now, I'll be honest. I hadn't been paying super close attention to the Blazers outside of checking in when I was alerted to another episode of Dame Time. So this tweet stood out to me because from the outside, the Blazers season, in my opinion, has been wildly successful considering the circumstances. Zach Collins has been out since the beginning of the season, hasn't played a game. Nurk has only played 20 games. CJ has only played 29. And yet the Blazers are currently the sixth seed, 8 games over .500 at 31-23. This, despite having a negative point differential, the 29th ranked defense, and an expected win-loss record of 27-27. So all things considered, a pretty successful outcome to be where they are. So what changed? Like, why would Danny tweet this? Well, in the past 2 weeks, the Blazers have gone 2-5, but more importantly, it's been who they've lost to and how they've lost to them. 18-point loss to the Bucks, 17-point loss to the Clippers, 19-point loss to the Jazz, 9-point loss to the Heat that wasn't that close, and then a tough 1-point loss to the Celtics. All five of those losses coming to playoff teams, only one of them particularly close. The only wins over that span was the tanking Thunder and Pistons. And this has continued a trend from this season. In games against teams that are 500 or better, the Blazers are now 9-15. In fact, they've only won one game against a Western Conference team above them in the standings. So you can understand how this recent stretch might put a Blazers fan on edge. Blazers edge, you might say. So Danny's tweet took me down a rabbit hole of Blazers fan comment sections, subreddits, the darkest corners of Portland basketball internet. And what I found, Andrew, it will shock you. It shocked me because what I found was a surprising number of Blazers fans suggesting, supporting, advocating for the idea of trading CJ McCollum this summer. Now, this was surprising to me because for years, as an outsider, you know, not a Blazers fan, the idea of breaking up that backcourt has always seemed to come from fans of other teams or from the national media, and it has rightfully been brushed away by most Blazers fans because it's pretty easy to defend that backcourt. 7 straight playoff appearances, a Western Conference Finals appearance. Do you know how many Western Conference teams can say that, Andrew? 7 straight playoffs, a Western Conference Finals appearance? How many, Andrew? Guess.
None.
One. Well, it's actually one, Andrew. The Rockets. The Houston Rockets. But after this season...
That will end.
That's what I'm talking about. After this season, yeah. The Blazers are likely going to be in sole control of the longest active playoff streak in the league. In fact, their only real competitor there is the Toronto Raptors. The Raptors would have to make it to get to 8 straight. But it seems like things have changed, at least for some Blazers fans. So Dame's entering his 31-year-old season next year. The addition of Covington hasn't really been enough to make the Blazers even a top 25 defense. That front court will seemingly never be healthy. And you look at this final stretch of the season, the Blazers are now only 1 game up on Dallas for the 6th seed. Portland has the 3rd toughest remaining schedule. Dallas has the easiest remaining schedule. There's a possibility that they have to do a play-in appearance with the risk of missing the playoffs. That's not as far-fetched as it might have seemed a few weeks ago. So in that scenario, or even a first-round exit, trading CJ is theoretically the move that would bring back the most and allow you to completely reshape the roster in a way that maybe better suits Dame in the final years of his prime. There's one problem, Andrew. Who do you trade CJ McCollum for? It's tough.
I don't know. He's got to tell me.
He's a great player. Listen to this. He's shooting 40% on 10 three-point attempts per game. That's incredible.
He's had a great season. Like I just don't know what more you could ask of him.
I don't think you can. And really it just comes down, I think for a lot of Blazers fan, is fit and just seeing this same show over and over again.
Yeah.
And just wanting to try something new. Now the names that were brought up the most often by Blazers fans were Ben Simmons and Chris Middleton. I don't think you're getting either of those guys, and neither do most Blazers fans. They admit, like, yeah, that'd be a pipe dream to get either of those guys for CJ. That'd be awesome. And I think either of those guys would be a great fit on the Blazers. So if we rule them out, what quality starter or starters could you realistically get for CJ? I came up with five fake trades of variable quality. Let's go through them, and you can tell me which is the worst, Andrew, okay?
Okay.
Now, as a disclaimer for any fake trade segment, if I involved your team in a trade, I'm sorry. I promise I'm not undervaluing your players just to upset you. I'm trying to help out Blazers fans. They're the ones that want this, not me. I don't want to trade CJ. It's them. Also, I have not included Anfernee Simons in any of these trades to be realistic, because you're not allowed to include Anfernee Simons in any trade. That's the rule. He can never be traded. There was actually a report this week that they did not want to include him in a trade for Aaron Gordon. Now, whether that's true or not, who knows? Aaron Gordon, by the way, would be a great fit on this Portland team. Not yes. getting him anymore. Okay, so I'm letting you know up front, this was really hard. Finding a trade that makes sense both for a team that would want CJ and then would want to give something back of value, and not just value, like you need to get at least one quality starter, ideally a perimeter player that can defend and also mm-hmm. has some offensive ability. Because, oh, by the way, in this scenario, they have to re-sign Norm Powell. Norm Powell is your starting shooting guard in this scenario. Okay, so yep. let's starting off, CJ plus Nasir Little, you're going to hear his name a lot, for Andrew Wiggins, James Wiseman, and a pick. Anything, Andrew?
No.
Anything?
No.
Okay, that was my worst one. I'll admit. I'm starting off with my bad ones first, and we're moving up.
I guess it depends on what the pick is. Is this a Warriors pick?
I mean, probably not in that scenario. Also, I don't know if CJ is like the best fit for the Warriors. It's not exactly what they need.
Yeah.
You have to, you would have to really believe in James Wiseman, because Wiggins is a definite downgrade from CJ, even though he would fit in with the Blazers team. Okay, so yeah, that one's off the table.
Yeah, you can't. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Don't even bother talking about it. All right, yeah, forget it. Next one. Okay, this is a one for one, straight up. Okay, CJ McCollum for Pascal Siakam.
Hmm.
Anything there? Anything?
That is interesting. If I'm the Raptors, I don't see why you'd do that.
I would agree.
I think they want to be young. I think they want to be younger.
It's probably true.
And also, I mean, positionally, it's a better mix, I would guess. I guess if I'm the Blazers, I probably consider that. Although, like, Pascal's taking a step back.
And that would be the reason season. Why you could potentially do this deal. Because, yeah, normally I would say the Raptors wouldn't do that. But maybe, you know, there were the rumors of the blow-up in the locker room with Nurse. Maybe, I don't know. I don't know if CJ sure. and Fred VanVleet is the greatest fit in a backcourt. Seem kind of similar.
I think you do know the answer to that, actually.
So you're probably not going to like... So I figured if you wouldn't be able to do that as the Raptors, would you be more willing to do like CJ for OG Anunoby and Chris Boucher?
No. All no, right. I like OG a lot. I think he would fit on this Blazers team, but not at the expense of CJ.
Okay, fine. Okay. Poo-pooed the first two. Guess what? I got three more, and they only get better. All right, this next one is a three-team trade. There's nothing worse than someone trying to explain a three-team trade on a podcast, so I'll make this as easy as possible, okay?
Okay.
The
okay.
Blazers get Al Horford, Marcus Smart, Kenrich Williams.
Hmm.
The Celtics get CJ McCollum.
Hmm.
The Thunder get the expirings of Tristan Thompson, Yusuf Nurkic, this year's first round pick from Boston, and then filler, like Grant Williams or someone like that. So the idea here is that the Celtics, if they were going to make a big move, having a real ball handler, having another ball handler so that you're not just relying on Kemba Walker, would be nice. Someone who can be a playmaker. I think CJ would be great for that. I mean, like, yeah. CJ's awesome. He's awesome.
He's very good.
40%, 10 threes a game. Marcus Smart would be like the ideal fit in Portland. Oh my gosh. Marcus Smart and Dame. That is just like, that is killer. And you play him with Norm
fans
Powell?
Would love Marcus, yeah.
And then, I know what Blazers fans would probably say, like, you're just giving away Yusuf Nurkic here. Yeah, he's an expiring. My thing is, like, do you really want to go into next season again just hoping it works out? Because in the last two seasons, Yusuf Nurkic has played 28 games total. Are you really going to put all of your bets on him And they would respond by saying, oh, so we're going to put all our bets on, well, you know, whatever, 35-year-old Al Horford? Yes, yes, that is what I'm telling you to do. So I kind of get that. And they probably, maybe they don't know a lot about Kenny Hustle, but they would also love Kenny Hustle.
Oh, they'd love him.
Anyway.
See, so I don't hate that for this reason alone, is that one of the problems with the Blazers is their depth.
Yes.
And that their bench is just not good. And they don't have any combination of bench players that is helpful. You look at the on-offs on cleaning the glass, and like the guys that are good in their on-offs, Covington, Nurkic, CJ, Dame, Norm Powell, Cantor is the only other one that's positive, only guy that's positive off the bench. But like you look, Nasir Little, -4. Rodney Hood, when he was there, -6. Derrick Jones Jr., -6. Anthony Simons, -8. Melo, -10. Harry Giles, -10. I mean, the problem is when Lillard and CJ are off the court, they're just screwed. And they need depth is what they need. And so that provides them with like three legit players for two. So I guess that helps your depth some, but probably not enough. So I think I would probably still say no to that.
You know what? I still got two trades coming, okay? And I'm banking a lot on these. These got to really impress you. All right, next one, CJ McCollum, Nasir Little, for Miles Turner and Caris LeVert.
Why do the Blazers do that? Or do the Pacers do that?
I don't know. Honestly, I did this one because I have no feel for Miles Turner's value.
Yeah.
Last year, this year, is he worth a lot? Is he not worth anything at all? I just like the fit of Miles Turner on that Blazers team. And
yeah,
I still don't know how I really feel about Caris LeVert. Now, I actually did go to some Pacers websites, and I read an article about, hey, should the Pacers build around Caris LeVert? So they're probably a little bit higher on him than I might have anticipated.
Oh, my.
So, oh my. Yeah. Listen, this is one of those deals where maybe you'd have to throw in Anthony Simons. Okay, I get it. But it was just an idea because Caris LeVert is big. He's a big wing. He's 6'6".
Yeah. Yeah.
And I do like Miles Turner a lot. I still think he's really undervalued in the league. But
sure.
Okay, fine. But I did, and also the backcourt combination of Malcolm Brogdon, CJ McCollum. That's nice.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah, I like that.
Okay, final one. You've hated all of my trades so far. By the way, this is more of an exercise in just proving to you how hard it would be to trade CJ McCollum for something of value, okay?
Yeah.
This is my final one, though, and I think this is my best one. CJ McCollum, Nasir Little, 4, Tobias Harris, Matisse Thybulle.
Yeah, that is just, it just doesn't inspire me at all if I'm the Blazers.
What?
I think it's a step back.
Career year for Tobias Harris.
Sure, sure. Out of the watchful eye of Doc Rivers, though, I'd worry.
Fine.
I'd worry. Doc Rivers is like has got like the secret sauce for him. Man, I don't know. You mentioned one before. Is the Chris Middleton one that crazy?
Yes, because, yes, I do think it is crazy. I think the Bucks would have to like flame out in the first round for the Bucks to even consider a move big.
If they don't go to the conference finals even, though.
Yeah.
They'd have to consider doing something. And you add, like, what do they lack? It's creation, right?
Yeah, like a dynamic creator.
A dynamic guard that can create.
Right.
Specifically. So I don't think that's that crazy. Oh. You had the backcourt of he and Drew Holiday with Giannis. I don't think it's that crazy. I don't think that they're that different of caliber of players. I think Middleton is a better player. He's a more versatile player. But I don't think we're talking like they're worlds apart here.
I don't think they're worlds apart, but I do think of Middleton at a higher tier in my head. And maybe that's just because he's made the one All-Star game. And, you know, CJ McCollum might have made the All-Star game this season if he had stayed healthy. Because his beginning of the season was absurd. But, hey, Blazers fans who are interested in training CJ, like they're loving what you're saying right now. If you're saying that Chris Middleton might actually be more realistic than we thought. I don't know. I still like that Tobias Harris, Matisse Thybulle. And again, I don't know if the Sixers do that. I would really like CJ on that Sixers team.
Oh,
but
love it.
Losing Tobias from that roster would be a hole, because one of the nice things about the Sixers is just how big they are. And so you're taking off two of their better wing players, like Tobias Harris, Matisse Thybulle, two of those bigger wings. So that identity that the Sixers have built up kind of gets stripped away. You become something different. But also CJ is awesome. So
yeah, I would love that for the Sixers, because then you just basically say, like, hey, Ben, you are the power forward.
Right.
And now you just have, like, all these you still have size, but you're just, like, more rangy, and you just fly around more on the defensive end. And then you have CJ that can create on the offensive end. Like, I would love that. If I'm the Blazers, if I'm replacing him with Tobias Harris, it's like, oh, man.
And Thybulle? Like, and Thybulle?
Yeah, I like Thybulle. He's fine. He's fine. He's not. I don't think he's like a big time difference maker unless he's on like a really good team. We would have the same conversations we had about Robert Covington changing the way that they play and making them a good defensive team. And like,
yeah, but what? Yeah, enough. But what if you had two Robert Covingtons?
Right.
If you could clone him. All right. Yeah,
again,
well,
increases your depth, but man, it's just hard. That's just he's difficult to trade just because he is quite valuable to the Blazers. They just need to address their depth issue, man. If they had two decent guys coming off the bench that came in and the bottom didn't fall out, I think they would actually be a pretty good team.
And the most likely scenario here is that they keep CJ. And if there is a move to be made, I bet it's the coach. I mean, we'll see what happens, but if they do flame out, either not making the playoffs or first round exit, I feel like that's the first move that would be made. It wouldn't be a major CJ trade. So, but thank you for entertaining me, and more importantly, the Blazers fans. They're the one that brought it up, okay? All right, Andrew, it's time to celebrate some birthdays.
Blow out the candles, get your cake, and eat it too. It's the birthday bash.
It's your birthday.
Somebody in here, it's your birthday.
It's your birthday.
Somebody in here, it's your birthday.
It's your birthday.
Everybody.
Andrew, you were on a hot streak last week. You were up to 19-16. You're an entertaining Eastern Conference team. And I've got five new ones for you. Actually, only four, because not very many people were born this week. First one for you. Who is younger? Going to give you two names of NBA players who had birthdays this week. Who is younger? Nerlens Noel, Juan Toscano-Anderson.
Nerlens Noel is younger.
That is correct. Nerlens turned 27 this week. Juan turned 28. Next, Reggie Jackson or Sixers process superstar Tony Roten.
Oh, my word.
Haven't thought about that name in a while, have you?
No. Reggie's younger?
No, he's not. Reggie is 31, and Tony Roten turned 28 this week.
Oh, my.
Bring him back. He's on my fantasy team for many years. All right, next up, time machine, Quentin Richardson, Baron Davis.
Quentin Richardson's younger.
That is correct. Quentin Richardson turning 41 this week, Baron Davis 42. Another one for you, Luol Deng, Boris Diaw.
Luol Deng is younger.
He is by 3 years. He is 36. Boris Diaw is 39. And for my final question, I didn't have a comparison, so I'm just going to make you guess this guy's name. Just straight up, Andrew, give me a number. How old is Wendell Carter Jr.? At his birthday this week.
Wendell Carter 22.
Jr. That is absolutely correct, Andrew. You got 4 out of 5. Again, 2 weeks in a row.
It's big time. I'm on a hot streak. I'm going to ride it. Going to ride it into the sunset, Al. Be sure to stick with us, because right after this break, we're going to talk about the Warriors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, Andrew, it's time once again for the Wheel of Fandom, the segment each week where we spin a digital wheel and it chooses one of the 30 NBA teams. We follow that team. We become massive fans watching all the games, reading the blogs, going to the subreddit. This week, it was the Golden State Warriors, currently 28-28, 20th in offense, 9th in defense. This past week, it was almost perfect. They went 4-1. And the only loss was that aforementioned loss with the Bradley Beal four-pointer. So, Andrew, if the team this week on the Wheel of Fandom is the Golden State Warriors, who is our guest?
We've got Ethan Strauss. Ethan, what's up?
Oh, hey, that's an incredible intro right there. That is a ton of energy. Now I am trying to match it, hopefully not blowing out the microphone. Incredible, amazing, fantastic to be here.
So speaking of energy, I was at the Thunder Warriors game here in OKC, and I noticed that there was a ton of energy coming from the Warriors bench, and not from the players, from the coaching staff. They're up and they're going nuts. They're even to the point where they are mimicking Steph Curry's drives. So like whatever Steph does at the rim, there was one member of the coaching staff, I don't know who it was, but he's up and he's like doing the arm movements of Steph Curry. I just wondered, is that a normal Warriors thing?
Now I'm trying to think about which coach it might have been on the sidelines. There's always been Kerr likes to have younger coaches on staff. It's better for working out the players. It's harder for it's a physical job to be an assistant coach in many instances. We don't think about it like that, but they've got to work hands-on with these dudes. So you've got guys who are in their 30s. Chris DeMarco comes to mind. Theo Robertson comes to mind. So it might have been one of those guys. Was it young or old? Who am I going with on that?
Younger? Oh, he's definitely younger, and he's sitting behind Kerr.
Mm. Yeah. Back of the bench. I'm going to guess... Yep. Theo Robertson is very stoic. I'm going to guess it wasn't Theo, but we'll... Oh, Luke Locks. Luke Locks. It was Luke Locks.
It sounds like a Luke Locks thing.
Yeah, that's my guess.
Coaching with joy.
Coaching with joy. Was.
Okay, Ethan, we caught the Warriors on an amazing Steph week. We got a 53-point game, back-to-back games with 10 or more threes, 25-point quarter in which he didn't miss a shot. Steph seems to still be at the peak of his powers. The team has obviously changed around him these last couple of years. What has it been like following this team through their incredible rise, the championship years, and now to be watching this team where Steph is still Steph, but the team is far less relevant on the national stage? And are there any benefits that you have found to following this type of team compared to those championship teams?
Yeah, well, it's a bit confounded by the entirety of civilization nearly collapsing. So
that
it's this, I can't right. even tell you, I can't say, you know, it's kind of cool to show up and there just aren't too many reporters there because you kind of can't show up to any physical location. I think my general theory, and I'm not a beat writer right now, we have Anthony Slater, who is the beat writer. But my general theory is if you are in that zone, you want a 50-win team. 50-win team is probably ideal working conditions. This is from a very selfish perspective. Maybe it's not one relevant to the fans, but that's perfect where there's relevance, there's intrigue. Ooh, maybe they could do it, but they're not actually going to do it. You know, people are into it, but it's not crazy. It was crazy. The energy around that team when it was on its ascent is unlike anything I've ever experienced in my life, unlike anything anybody around that team had experienced, with the exception of Steve Kerr. It was, for a while during the incredible win streak, like following the Beatles in the 60s, where they're going through the concourse to try to get to an interview area that can accommodate everyone, and fans are just reaching towards them and screaming and running at them. It was almost this just magnetic pull that was primal. And I think it was too much for Steph in many ways around that time. I think that's one of the reasons he accepted KD into the situation, was to deflect some of that, because It's a lot, man. And I bet he prefers those days to these days. But I think for him, there are some upsides to just not being in the spotlight constantly and not having all of those demands and all of that pressure. At the same time, I think he wants to play meaningful basketball. He wants more championships. And that is the current tension, I believe, logical tension in the organization. Their timelines aren't exactly aligned. They've got veterans, window closing, but they've got draft picks coming up. They've got a rookie in Wiseman who's now out for the season. That's really the whole conundrum they're facing right now.
Yeah, so just talking about how great Steph is right now, how would you rank these factors in terms of how critical of a role they'll play in the Warriors' ability to get back into contention? So number one, Klay's health. Two, the quality of the bench. Three, James Wiseman's development. Also, Wiseman? Where do you land on that?
Wiseman. For some reason, people thought it was Wiseman. They were trying to make him Jewish. I can say that, I suppose. I mean, but he's not, and it's Wiseman. So there you go. Boom.
Okay. All right. Thank you. James Wiseman's development, number three. Number four, Golden State landing the Wolves pick.
Okay, so I think I put Wiseman first because...
Yeah,
that's a huge swing factor in terms of organizational just trust and that they're on the right, they're on the same page and they're making the right choices. It's almost capital in a way. If they hit on the draft pick and everybody isn't saying, what about LaMelo? That is just a huge, huge, at a position of need, swing factor for the organization. Klay's health, I would rank second. Maybe I rank it second because I almost take it for granted that he's always going to be able to at least command a defense. I mean, they're not going to leave him open. Even if he's not as spry as he once was, even if his defense isn't what it once was, I just take for granted that he is at the very least going to be a decoy threat. So I think that's maybe why I'm giving Wiseman the edge over Klay. I'm trying to remember. There was bench depth and there was one more. There was one more in there.
Then the Wolves pick.
And the Wolves pick. Getting the Wolves pick, was that what you were saying? Because, well, they're going to get a Wolves pick.
Right.
No matter what happens, it's either going to be this lottery or, given the tradition of the Wolves, next lottery. So I'm probably going to, but still, let's change a little bit. The fact that it's a good pick, you know, like let's say it's a four or five, that'd be a pretty big deal. Let's put that at number three and then bench depth. You know, this team is one without bench depth. Bench depth is good, but it doesn't spend so far in the postseason because starters play more. I'll put that at four.
So when you put James Wiseman's development number one, are you thinking that more as his development as a player for this Warriors team going forward, or as like a trade asset to acquire some bigger star, or a combination of both?
I would say for this team going forward, if you asked me that question 2 months ago, maybe it's a different answer because he's out for the season. So he's not really going to get showcased. And it's this tricky thing. It's hard. It's like having Bitcoin, where if it's going up, you don't want to trade it in. I mean, if Wiseman starts crushing it, I mean, you kind of almost can't trade him at that point because that is the potential to haunt you for 15 years. Right. If you think he's going to be legitimately great, so I do think about it more in terms of his contributions to the organization, because the window to trade him is probably past. I mean, they're not going to do it likely now with the meniscus, maybe. I mean, the logical time to do it would almost be this offseason, I guess is what I'm saying. And it'd have to be a situation where they call you. You know, you're not going to be shopping him, because if you shop him, you're depressing his value. So, yeah, I think about it more as they're pot committed to him, at least for the short term. You want to see him get a full offseason in there to really know what you have. And a lot will turn on whether he's able to realize his talent.
So the other main character in the James Wiseman story is Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr versus Warriors Twitter has kind of been an ongoing battle this season. And reading fan comments, it seems like there's a not insignificant number of Warriors fans who maybe like a week ago wanted to get rid of Kerr, which seems very unlikely. But what have been some of the major criticisms lobbed at Kerr this season? And do you think fans are justified in some of those criticisms?
When you say that, I wonder, like, what percentage, if we're making the Venn diagram, when we say Warriors Twitter, Warriors fans, like, two guys I'm friends with in Sam Esfandiari and Andy Liu. You know, how much of it is them? How much of it is them as the charismatic outsiders that they are, marshaling more people to see things their way? I'm not sure. I would, if I'm just, I'm right now, I'm doing the their criticism. And some of Andy's criticism is for effect, I think. But Sam, I think, is more of the straight man in the routine. I think if I was trying to use what Sam is saying, it's he's stubborn and he's not adjusting to the modern NBA and he's trying to distract with the political activist messaging from the shortcomings. And I think that would be the general gist. And maybe it's more complicated than that. Maybe I'm not doing it justice, but I think that's the sense of things coming from them. And I think if you're making more of a Kerr argument, you would say, you want more pick and roll? More pick and roll is the solution to everything? Well, guess what? They have a ton of non-shooters on this roster. At least the guys who can play defense can't shoot. And if you try to run pick and roll all day, the defense is going to sag off all of the non-shooters. You're not going to get what you want out of it. It's not a panacea. I think there's merit to both perspectives on that one. But I think those are the arguments.
Well, we did have an Alan Smilagich question all queued up, but we've got to move on. Aww. We've got to move on to our last question. I know. So how important is it for this team to make the playoffs? They're sitting at ninth in the West. They have the Spurs and the Pelicans behind them that don't seem to be putting a ton of pressure on them as far as like play-in goes. You'd think they'd make the play-in. They have the 23rd easiest schedule left. But how important is it for this team to actually get into the playoffs?
It's really all about if Steph cares. If Steph doesn't care about making the playoffs, then 1-2-3 Cancun. Like, who cares? Like, yeah. You know, you get an extra draft pick. I mean, I'm with Luka Doncic. You know, this play-in tournament thing is goofy. I get why they did it. They're trying to make sure teams don't tank. They're trying to maintain interest. But suddenly it's making the playoffs just doesn't have the same status that it used to have because you can do the play-in and get into the playoffs. So I don't know how much it should matter. But if the perspective of Steph Curry is I need to see some progress, we need to get in the playoffs. I can't miss the playoffs two seasons in a row. I'm going to get antsy and I'm going to want to trade to Charlotte if you guys don't get your act together and start winning now. If that's Steph's perspective, I'm not saying that it is, but plausibly it could be, he likes to win. Then it's very important to make the playoffs. I just think it all comes down to Steph. That's really what it's about. And, otherwise everything around that, I don't know if it matters that much.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them. You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, thank you, Ethan. It is now time for Andrew versus the Beat, our weekly game show where we pit Andrew against a beat writer for one of the teams. Of course, this week it is Ethan Strauss, who's a Warriors writer, not a beat writer.
Not a beat writer, and I'm scared off the bat because I grew up in San Diego. If you go Warriors history on me, I might be lacking. It might be a little.
That's pretty close. I mean, Andrew grew up in Oklahoma City, way farther away. So you've already got geography on your side. Okay, so how this is going to work? There are 8 trivia questions, all about the Warriors in some form or fashion. Ethan, you're going to get the first pick. You're just going to tell me a number. It's going to correspond to a question. It might be a really easy question. It might be a hard question. You don't know. And if you get it right, you get 2 points. If you don't get it right, Andrew will have a chance to steal for 1 point. We'll go back and forth choosing questions till all 8 questions have been answered. So, Ethan, let's start it off. Can you give me a number?
5.
Question number 5. Only 2 number 1 picks in NBA history have been traded by the team that drafted them before playing a game. Both of these players have played for the Warriors. Who are they?
How far back does Warriors history go? Like, who was Wilt Chamberlain drafted by is what I'm going with. Like, I don't know. I'll go Wilt Chamberlain. And I don't understand the phrasing completely of this question. And I'll go and the draft pick needs to play for the Warriors at some juncture in this question. Yes. Like,
correct.
He needs to do it. That's what needs to happen. Why do I think that Weber was not the number one pick? I'll go Weber as well, even though it doesn't. Yeah.
Okay. Great guesses. Incorrect. Andrew, do you have any guesses for this question?
Is this Chris Weber and Joe Smith?
Also incorrect. The correct answer, you guys both got Chris Weber. That was correct. He was drafted by Orlando, traded to Golden State Warriors. The other player, Andrew Wiggins, drafted by the Cleveland Cavaliers, traded to the Minnesota Timberwolves. Okay, Andrew, choose a question between 1 and 8.
Number one.
Number one. In NBA history, Steph Curry and Klay Thompson account for 6 of the top 10 seasons in NBA history with the most made three-pointers. Okay, so there's 10 seasons, most made three-pointers ever. They account for 6 of those 10 spots. Which 3 players make up the other 4 spots?
James Harden.
That's one guess. Yeah. I'm not telling you if it's right or wrong.
It's right.
No, Ethan's not going to tell you either.
It's right.
Don't trust Ethan.
Got to be right. I know. I'll say Luka and Paul George.
There's your final answer. Those are incorrect. Some of them might have been correct. Some of them might have been wrong. Ethan, you get a chance to steal. Which 3 players make up the other 4 spots in the top 10 seasons for most three-pointers made?
So I'll go Harden. That's one of them. Lillard and Dennis Scott.
Lillard and Dennis Scott, interesting choices. Guess what? Andrew actually got one of them, Paul George.
Ah.
Do you know who the 3rd name was? What if I told you he played for the Sacramento Kings? Buddy Hield.
Wow. Yeah, the game has progressed.
Okay, the score is still 0-0. I think you guys chose the 2 hardest to start us off, or at least let's hope you did. Okay, Ethan, you get the next question.
I will go 3.
Number 3. From 1995 to 2007, the Golden State Warriors made the playoffs 0 times, which is the 4th longest playoff drought in NBA history. Who are the only franchises who have longer playoff droughts?
I got my Clippers, I got my Wolves, and I got my Kings. That's what I'm going with.
Ethan, that is absolutely correct for 2 points.
Ah, nice.
All right, Andrew, it's your turn.
7.
Whew, okay.
Oh, no. Don't do that.
Wilt Chamberlain holds the top 12 spots in Warriors franchise history for most points scored in a game. Okay? Top 12 spots. Which non-Wilt Warrior has scored the most points in a game in franchise history? Pretty easy. So just, who scored the most points for the Warriors in their history other than Wilt? Simple question.
Klay Thompson?
That is incorrect. Ethan, you have a chance to steal.
This is most a single points game. In a game. Most Simple. Points in a game.
Just not Wilt. Just the second guy.
The second guy. This is sneaky. This is sneaky.
Who could it be? Who could it be?
This is sneaky.
I'll go Steph Curry. I don't have a better answer.
That is absolutely incorrect. It was actually Rick Barry.
Oh my God.
64 points.
See,
wow.
It's a sneaky question. You could tell. It would be too obvious.
It was a sneaky one. You correctly identified it as being sneaky. Okay, Ethan, it is your turn.
We'll go six.
Number six. The Warriors have had a player make the All-Star game in 8 straight seasons, a streak which began in 2012-2013 when David Lee made the team. Now, prior to the 2012-2013 season, who was the most recent Warrior to make an All-Star game?
Probably going to go with, I'll go with Chris Mullin.
All right, Chris Mullin, that is incorrect. Andrew, you have a chance to steal.
Figured it would be.
For 1 point.
Is this Latrell Sprewell?
Oh, that's a good guess.
Andrew, that is absolutely correct. It was Latrell Sprewell in 1996-97.
Oh, my God.
That was a great guess. That was true. Yeah, that was, right before everything happened.
Yes, that is correct. Another piece of Warriors history. Okay, Andrew, you have a chance to take the lead if you get this one right.
Two.
Question number two. While Steph and Clay are both known for going Nova in any given quarter, it is this Warrior who holds the NBA playoff record for most points scored in a quarter with 29 and most points scored in a half with 39.
I know the answer to this.
Ooh, he's putting pressure on you, Andrew.
I'll say Chris Mullin. I don't know.
Not a chance. Ethan, what is the correct answer?
And this is opposed. You're saying playoff record, yes?
That is correct, just, yes.
Sleepy Floyd.
That is correct. Sleepy Floyd.
Not a chance.
Not a chance. Okay, Ethan, it is your turn. You are now up 3-1. Commanding lead.
I mean, not always for the Warriors in Warriors history. Number 8.
All right, my favorite question. Here we go. The Warriors are one of only 4 teams in the league without an official mascot. Their previous mascot, Thunder, was retired after the 2007 season due to a name conflict with the newly formed Oklahoma City Thunder. Thunder wasn't the Warriors' first mascot, however. For one magical season, from what I can tell online, in 1996, the Warriors had a different mascot, described by a local newspaper as a, quote, furry, sunglass, and floppy hat-wearing creature. Which of the following was the name of that mascot? I'm going to give you 5 names. You're going to tell me which one was the name of the mascot, okay? Pretty simple. Okay. Goldie, Berserker, Big Mac, Turbo, or Dr. Hoop? Again, that was Goldie, Berserker, Big Mac, Turbo, Dr. Hoop.
I have no idea what the answer to that question is, but I'm gonna go with Berserker only because that would have been such a crazy thing to come up with if it wasn't the truth.
Ethan, that is absolutely correct. It was Berserker.
That's what I was going to guess to. I was like, okay. Alex definitely came up with Dr. Hoop.
Yeah, Dr. Hoop was the one I knew was fake, but I liked it. Dude, this is crazy. Literally, there are 2 references to Berserker on the internet. One is this local newspaper who wrote up this story about Berserker. The other is a Reddit post of some guy in the Warriors subreddit being like, hey, do you guys remember Berserker? And everyone in the comments being like, no, who is that? And there's no photos of Berserker. I could not find one photo of this mascot ever existing.
Wow.
It reminds me of co-owner Peter Guber announcing that they were going to replace the mascot and trying to hype up the crowd. This was before they turned the Warriors organization around and started winning. And I remember him telling everybody, and it was such a strange quote in his thick Northeast, I think Boston accent. It's like, it's not just going to be a little furry thing running around. Like, what?
Yeah, we want a badass mascot.
So maybe he was briefed on the Berserker, and that's what he was referencing, because I just remember looking at other media members like, furry thing running around, okay.
Well, they have successfully buried Berserker's history.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't exist. Bring him back.
Yeah.
All right, Andrew, you have secured your seventh straight loss because you're now down 5-1. However, we do have one question left. You can save a little bit of face. Okay. So here it is. In the 2015-2016 season, the Golden State Warriors only lost 9 games. Remember that? Best regular season in NBA history. We are going to attempt to name all 9 teams that the Warriors lost to during that season. We're going to start with Andrew. He's going to give me a name of a team. We're going to go to Ethan. Oh, he's going to give me a name. We're going to go back and forth until one of you stumbles.
Jeez.
Or until you get all 9 teams that beat the Warriors that season. So, Andrew, give me a team name.
Houston.
Houston. All right. Right off the bat, that is a miss for Andrew.
I'll give the team that beat them, and I don't know if I can even remember any of the other teams that season. I was living that season, which is crazy that I can't remember, but the Bucks. The Bucks beat them.
The Bucks were the first team to beat them. And then the Mavericks, Nuggets, Pistons, Blazers, Lakers, Spurs, Celtics, Timberwolves. If you had just guessed...
I remember the Lakers. I do remember the Lakers game. Because that was...
Oh, now he's a Warriors fan. Here he comes. All right, so that brings us to the end of this week's episode of Andrew versus the Beat with a final score of 6-1. Andrew has lost again, this time to Ethan Sherwood Strauss. Thanks for playing.
Yeah, that was one of my worst weeks ever. Ethan, thanks so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. And make sure that you go listen to Ethan's podcast, House of Strauss. You can listen to him on the Athletic NBA show as well. Thanks again, Ethan.
Thanks for having me. That was very impressive trivia, guys, and you do great work. I don't know if they've solidified who should be the new host of Jeopardy yet, but you know, maybe it should be you guys. I don't know. Just throwing that out there.
All right, Andrew, it is now time to spin the wheel and find out who our team is going to be for next week on the Wheel of Fandom. We only have 22 teams left, Andrew. Any guesses before I spin it? Any guesses?
Oh, maybe the Kings? Give me the Kings.
I'm guessing the Cavs. Here we go. Wheel of Fandom, turn. Show us the team that we will learn. It is the Sixers!
Yes! This is great. This is great. We got some great Sixers writers for The Athletic, and one of my favorite teams to watch anyways. I'm watching them every week anyway, so this is perfect.
Embiid's back, full squad. This is great.
Yes, let's do it. Thanks so much for listening to our show. Quick shout out to a couple people who left us 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. Sports Rabbi says, love the show, guys, all the way from the Holy Land of Israel. Best podcast to get me up to date on the NBA every week, and I love the Beat Writer segment and hope and pray from the Western Wall that one day soon, Andrew will win the weekly trivia contest. Oh, thank you so much. Keep your prayers coming because it's not happening. It doesn't feel like it's happening anytime soon. And then also from Tim Hedge 18, I love all the Athletic shows across all sports, but no show brings me more joy than the Saturday Slam and Jam. Andrew and Alex provide great insight while keeping things goofy. I always look forward to my Saturday morning runs while listening to SSAJ. Thanks so much, guys, for leaving those. If you leave a 5-star review on the Athletic NBA show and mention our show, maybe you can have yours read as well. So be sure to do that. Be sure to subscribe to The Athletic at theathletic.com/NBA show. Be sure to follow Alex on Twitter at AlBabyCakes. You can follow me on Twitter at Andrew K. Schlecht. And we will talk to you guys again next week.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a 1-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.